Petition number 22093, Reel 2.
Harold Kirk, Reel 2. And were you just burnt on the hands and face?
Yeah. Neck, everything, you know. All that, because of course I had me... I was sleeping in ordinary clothes. If we did, he didn't strip off at all. He just went down, got your head down, that was it. No, it was all my face and hair and all my hands and that, yeah.
So your clothing protected you?
Oh, my clothing must have protected me, no, yeah. I would have been terrible without that, yeah.
And did you make a full recovery from the burns?
Oh, absolutely, no problem whatsoever. I was in Aberdeen Hospital approximately a month. That was from about May the 6th for a month. And of course, at that time, Dunkirk was starting. So they pushed me on the train because they said Aberdeen said I was fit enough to travel. Because I just started what I stood up in. And they put me on the train to Portsmouth. I got into Portsmouth barracks. I went straight in to report in. And then immediately he said, right, you're going to Dunkirk. I said, you what? You can't be serious. So I explained what had happened, where I was from, and I was due to go on a month's leave. What they call survivor's leave. And, you know, as soon as they realised who I was, what I'd been through, that I was due to go on a month's leave and the burns, everything I'd suffered, they sent me back home. So I went home for a month, the rest of the month. Came back down to barracks again, and by then, the French Navy was deciding to go back home to France, because the remnants of their fleet were in Portsmouth Harbour. So one morning, we were all called together, everybody in barracks, no matter who you were, and we were all given rifles, and we went down, we were transported down to Portsmouth Harbour, and we captured all these French ships before they had a chance to go back to France.
What exactly happened when you captured the ships?
Nothing. Just went on board the ship, and all the French people were off. Yeah, presumably they would want to go home or whatever. And yeah, we chucked all the Frenchmen off. The ship I was on was a destroyer called the L'Incomprise. Yeah, and I was on that then for the next 16 months.
What was the reaction of the Frenchmen aboard the warship?
No, they didn't really worry. I suspect they were glad to get off, I would think. Because, they were in a filthy state. They were really in a filthy state. Now, at that time, I was going out with a young lady whose mother was French. Her father and mother met during the First World War. Father, English soldier. Mother, French lady. Now, the thing was, I should have known better, because the French mother of this girl I was going out with, her family came from Lille, and of course they were occupied by the Germans, and I made a big mistake. I wrote to, Frida was her name, and I complained about the state of the French Navy. Oh dear. And she packed me up completely. And you know, I never saw her anymore for 34 years. By that time, I was a widower. My first wife had died in 72. And it so happened that I was on my way down to Portsmouth, and I called in Grimsby to see my sister. And I met Frida the first time for 34 years. And I was on my way down to Portsmouth for an annual reunion. But without going into too much detail on the personal side, instead of going to Portsmouth, I returned home to Middlesbrough, and Frida came with me. That was in 1974. And in 1976, we married. Yeah.
Did she say anything about why she'd given you the push? Huh? Did she say anything about why she...
Yeah, because I'd criticised the French Navy. Of course, she obviously, you could see her point. She was younger than I was, and all her French relations were in German occupied territory. Yeah.
But was it true what you said about the French sailors?
Oh, absolutely. They were bloody filthy. God, you know, not like, I mean, our navy. You go to the loo. You go into a private. You go into a loo, an ordinary loo. There, in the French navy, you go and hang on to two handles and do it down a hole in the ground. And, oh dear. It was terrible, really. Yeah, really terrible. Anyhow, that cost me my first serious young lady, yeah. Ah, well.
And this warship was called L'Incomprise?
L'Incomprise, yeah. L
apostrophe
I-N-C-O-M-P-R-I-S-E. L'Incomprise, yeah. There was quite a few of these French destroyers in the Portsmouth Harbour. Anyhow, I went on that one. I was the signalman of the boarding party on that one, yeah.
And you stayed in the ship?
Stayed in the ship for 16 months, yeah.
Did it go to sea?
Yeah, with a bit of luck. We were supposed to be there for the Channel convoys, you know, to stop the Germans from coming out, you know, of all their Channel ports and attacking our convoys. Well, we were there officially for the convoy escort, but we weren't allowed to stay at sea very long because of the noise. The ships made noise, and we were not protected. You know, during the war, they introduced this, what they call degaussing gear. It's an anti-noise thing. And until we got that on, we had to go into dock in London to have that put on. We weren't allowed to go to sea in rough weather. So anyhow, we got this thing on, this degaussing gear on, and I found we then went round to Campbelltown and the Isle of Arran to do torpedo training exercises with the submarines. Yeah. Stayed on there for 16 months, and I was called back down to Portsmouth Parish to commission a new ship, and I went on what they call HMS Pakenham. That was another Captain D destroyer. Yeah, officially we were going to the Far East. Right, so that we commissioned that in 1941, and. Let me think. Yeah, 1941. Then we did exercise up at Scapa, you know, with two or three more of our destroyers, and we set sail for the Far East in March 1942, officially for the Far East. But at the same time, we escorted a convoy to India, troop convoy. You know, we left Greenock down the Clyde. You go out miles away into the Atlantic. Go all around the Azores, you know, Cape Town, Durban, and then up to India with these troops. The Windsor Castle, that was the main one I remember. Yeah. Anyhow, we got so far down to Durban, and lo and behold, the Japs were starting to operate in the Indian Ocean. So we went and invaded Madagascar with these troops. That was 1942, and we moved in, went into Punta Delgada in Madagascar. That was the harbour there, and of course we were out to sea on patrol looking for all the Jap submarines, because they were after these troop convoys that were going to India.
Did anything happen on the invasion?
No, everything really went, we just invaded Madagascar and took it over with our troops. And as far as I was concerned, it was all very, very quiet. Until suddenly, this business in Crete opened up. You know, we lost an awful lot of ships in Crete. And instead of going out to the Far East, we were sent with two or three more ships to replace the ships that had been sunk in the Mediterranean. which believe you me, I was very pleased as well, because I didn't fancy getting sunk in the Indian Ocean or China Sea, and the sharks operating around. So I was very, very grateful to go to the Mediterranean.
Where were you based in the Mediterranean?
In Alex was our base. Yeah, I was on the HMS Pakenham. Yeah. But we escorted convoys from Portside to Casablanca. You know, and then they would be taken over by the American escort and taken to America. And we would go out there to meet them and then bring them back to Portside to start up again. Yeah. Convoys were the soldiers, food. I don't know what was in these convoys. But my very first convoy, God, it was about 100 ships or something like that in there. Yeah, oh dear, absolutely marvellous. Anyhow, we were escorting those convoys. And of course, we had quite a big American fleet, Mediterranean fleet then. And the Italians, of course, they were frightened. And that was it. They wouldn't come out. But of course, going along the Mediterranean, it was unbelievable you could be at sea in the Mediterranean, say, for 10 or 11 days at a time. But of course, we used to get terribly bombed because all the German Air Force that was coming from Italy and France. And they were just, in the Straits, we were just sitting targets. Anyhow, this went on for a bit. We were quite happy about it.
Was the ship hit during the...
Yeah, so I'm coming to that now. The next thing was, Rommel. Could I? Yeah. At that time, after going up and down, I explained, so it's unbelievable that you could be at sea 10 or 11 days at a time, but you'd appreciate how that came about, because then Rommel was really in the fore, and he was heading towards Cairo. It came to El Alamein, and that's where he stopped. Montgomery started October 42, pushing them back. Right, so as they fell back, we were going along the coast, bombarding, just helping them along a little bit, you know. Yeah, and until we got right down to North Africa. By then, my ship and seven others were in Malta, and our duty was to go to sea, patrol all around the Gulf of Suez and Sfax, and knock out any ships, submarines, trying to get German troops off North Africa and taking them back home to France. One night, particularly, we sunk 13 ships. We were classed, at that time, when I moved house, I lost the part of the newspaper I had where we were classed as the Daily Mirror ship, because it was in the Daily Mirror. We sunk 13 ships that one night, yeah, including a submarine, because they were trying to get their troops off North Africa and back home over to France. We were operating from Malta, and we used to go out to sea, about seven or eight of us. We'd go out to sea regular, operating off Sicily, Pantelleria, you know, harassing anything we could do, until it came down to this, because we were at sea day in, day out. We'd go to sea during the night, come in early morning, stores out again, and that went on for a long time. And all the time this North African campaign was coming to a close. And it so happened that certain of the ships had to go into dock in Malta, maintenance, and it so happened this particular night, there was just two of us. there was the Pakenham, we were the senior officer, and the Paladin. We were out on patrol in between Sicily and Pantelleria, and we met two German destroyers. Well, there were two Italian destroyers, but basically manned by Germans. And we had a bit of a ding-dong with them. We were very fortunate, inasmuch as that we each closed each other. And luckily for us, we opened fire first. And we hit both those, and they were sunk. Both the German ships were sunk. But at the same time, they hit us, because we were the leading destroyer. The Paladin was about a mile astern, So it was sort of out of, probably the Germans didn't know it was, a paladin was there. Anyhow, they hit us, same time as we sunk both them. And we were in such a state, and everything was stopped. We lost about 47 people from that ship. I was on the bridge. Well, I was very, very fortunate. Yeah, because you could saw these tracers coming towards you. So I was on the bridge, and the captain says, "Everybody out." So down to the office, which is the main signal office, just below the bridge, there's an iron ladder. So as soon as the captain said, "Everybody out," saw these tracers coming towards us, I dived down the ladder out of the way, and I got away with it. All the enemy shells hit the all the superstructure behind the bridge. Yeah, didn't hit the bridge at all, apparently, so I was told. Anyhow, it so happened that we were put out of action and we were drifted into the minefield. Anyhow, this took place about 2 o'clock in the morning on April the 16th, 1943. Yeah, April the 16th, 1943. And about 2 o'clock in the morning, we were drifting, and so our captain, he told the paladin, we got off, abandoned ship. The paladin picked us all up, what was left, survivors, and then put torpedoes in us and sunk us, yeah, because we were in the minefield anyway, yeah.
What were you personally doing during the period between seeing the tracers and evacuating the ship?
Just down in this office, waiting for the order to abandon ship. Yeah.
Who was seeing to the wounded?
Oh, we had our own medical people. They were all a lot of the wounded were taken after the wardroom. Yeah, yeah. So anyway, we finished up on the Paladin, and that was a second lot of good clothing I'd lost, and all my mementos and all my personal bits and pieces I'd lost. Yeah.
How exactly did you transfer from Pakenham to Paladin?
I just jumped over it, come alongside to a degree, and then I was lucky. As soon as I saw it near enough, I just jumped over. Look, so as you can imagine, I got away all right that time, yeah, no problem. And they took us home to Malta, because we'd been out there, been out in the Mediterranean then, 15 months then, no, 14 months, we all expected to go home. You know, for get a dealership, but no, we're all transferred to Alexandria. And myself, I was by then a petty officer, a yeoman, equivalent to a sergeant. And my chief and another chief on the ship, the three of us were great pals. We all went into the same barracks in Alexandria. And strangely enough, the commodore in charge of the barracks in Alexandria was our late skipper. He left us by then, and we got a new captain, but it was Captain Treswell. He was now commodore of the barracks in Alexandria. So they call the place Canopus. So what he did, he said to us three, he said, "Right, where you go, you can have a fortnight's leave." So we had a fortnight's leave on the Puritan, one of those houseboats on the Nile. Yeah. Lovely. So after our fortnight's...
What did this houseboat consist of?
Just, you see them in the cinema. Just a proper living accommodation. A massive big thing. You know, like you... Murder on the Nile sort of thing. One of those ships. One of those boats. So we had a marvellous fortnight. But it was tied up alongside. It wasn't going up and down the Nile. Just tied up alongside in Cairo. Yeah. And we went on the three of us went on the services radio while we're out there. We did a quiz competition with three South African female soldiers, and they knocked spots off us. They did, because they're asking questions like, I hadn't got a clue about where does caviar come from, that sort of thing. And anyhow, all the questions, they knocked spots off us, yeah. Anyhow, after that fortnight, I went back to barracks, and I was sent to Cyprus.
What was life like in Alex during the war?
I don't know very little about it. Sorry. I thought you'd think about the talk about the barracks, Alexandra itself. Yeah. When I was on the Barham and the Pakenham, and of course the Freedy, was great. In Alexandria, you just gog out, pictures, that sort of thing. It was just like an ordinary. You were pestered, of course, by the gilly gilly men, and dirty postcard men, all that sort of thing.
What exactly was a gilly gilly man? What was a gilly gilly man?
Well, he's a magician. Oh, did all sorts of things, and we didn't take any notice of them. No, they're all there, but they're always after trying to sell you dirty postcards, that sort of thing. Yeah, but it was all right, no problem. We had no trouble at all. Of course, no doubt about it. Germans had plenty of spies there, because Egypt was officially neutral, I suppose, at that time. We were just based there. Yeah. Oh,
Then you went to Cyprus, you said?
Yeah, I went to Cyprus. I went by train from Alexandria to Beirut. And then all on the train, we went through Tel Aviv to Beirut, and then from Beirut to Famagusta by ship. Yeah. And I was there for 11 months. And I was, by then, of course, I was a fully-fledged sergeant. And my job, I had three signalmen. And we worked for the commanding officer in Cyprus. It was a four-ring captain.
Yeah. Is this in Famagusta?
Famagusta, yeah. Yeah, Famagusta. We lived in villas and that sort of thing, There was myself on the visual signals. There was a chappie on the radio side. Another sergeant, or equivalent, we're all POs, petty officers, and he was seaman, and we had a little staff, and we used to work, do message, we used to receive signals from all our various places, Crete and that sort of thing, and kayaks, those sailing ships, would go out at night time, I don't know what they were doing, probably spying. I haven't a clue, really. But we were there anyway, at Famagusta. Yeah. I was there for 11 months.
Which did you prefer, being in Egypt or being in Cyprus?
Oh, no, being in Cyprus.
Why?
Duty free, it was cheap. Yeah, we're living in a posh villa. Yeah. Aye. Posh villa, it was marvellous, it was. It was just like a rescue. Yeah. But in the end, it got the better of me. Because whiskey was six bob a bottle. And I thought, if I stay here much longer, I would get a liking to this stuff. So I volunteered to go to sea, back to sea. And they said, right, thank you very much indeed. They needed a chief yeoman, of course I was a yeoman, but I was upgraded to acting chief yeoman on a frigate called the Dart. And that was in Alexandria. And I was on the Dart then until I came home in 1944, November 44. Yeah.
What kind of duties did the Dart have?
Convoys escorting all convoys on the Mediterranean. Yeah, yeah. Of course, there was no by then. You see, from 1940 to January 44. January 44, because there was no worry then about any possibility of the Italian fleet coming out or the German fleet coming out. The only thing we had to worry about was air attacks and submarines. That's all.
Were there any attacks on Dart?
No, not at all. We had lots and lots of convoy work. There's plenty of attacks in the convoy itself, but not specifically on the Dart. Anyway, it came that November 44. I'd been out in the Mediterranean, at least since I'd left England, 2 years and 10 months. And so I was shipped onto a cruiser called the Royalist and brought home to Portsmouth. And I came home. I arrived in England on November the 8th, 1944. I got engaged and now married on November the 16th, 1944. And in December 44, I was on another ship due for the Far East, HMS Armada. Yeah, a new battle-class destroyer. Yeah. Oh, dear. Oh, I didn't leave. They didn't believe in letting you hang around too much. Yeah.
Did you get to the Far East?
Yeah, I got the Far East, yeah. But it was nearly all over by the time we got there, yeah. Yeah, we arrived in Shanghai, in Hong Kong, May 45, yeah.
How did you like being in this ship as compared to the others?
Oh, it was marvellous. Well, it's a destroyer mine, but it was a beautiful ship, yeah.
Was it brand new?
Absolutely brand new, yeah. All the ships I've been on, apart from when I joined the Afridi when it was, what, about 12 months old, all the other ships I've been on have all been brand new ones, yeah. Yes, I was acting chief yeoman on the Armada, and we went to Hong Kong, Shanghai, you know, all around that area, Singapore, making sure that all the Japs were gone, yeah. Of course, by then, May 45, the war was over. And after everything was all tied up there, the surrender terms were signed. We sort of turned over Hong Kong, you know, back to the Hong Kong government, Shanghai back to the Chinese government, and all the fleet dispersed. And I finished up on the Armada. We went various places with the aircraft carriers out there. I went to Fiji, Australia, New Zealand, all around that area, yeah. Until 1946, I came home in about October 1946.
To go to the Bruce.
To go to the Bruce, yeah. Straight there.
Were you in any active service after the Second World War?
Yeah, well, no, I wasn't in that. No, as you say, I was born in 1920. I joined the Navy when I was 15. And when you're 18 in the Navy, you're then signed on for 12 years. So that 12 years from the age of 18 took me to 1950. But of course, the Korea War started in 1950. And I was kept in for another 18 months.
Did you go to Korea?
No. They shot me out of the Mediterranean to another ship called the Peacock. That was... Hey, dear. That had a real good do. So I was on the Peacock anyway until December 1950. And then I came home, yeah. Officially to go outside. But of course, by then, the war had started in Korea. And we were kept in for a further 18 months. Yeah. Yeah.
How do you feel now about having served in the Navy in the Second World War?
No problem. I've got nothing against it. No. No. Well, I joined up. I volunteered to do my duty. I did it to the best of my ability. At least that's what I think. Yeah. Oh, I had a great time.
What was Admiral Vian like to work with?
He was an absolute marvellous man. I was the only one on the staff of HMS Afridi who was allowed to shake him during the night with any signals. Because where I used to operate was a signal office, and just across the little passage was his sea cabin. That's it. But he was a marvellous man, no problem whatsoever. And I always remember him well, because, as I said, I was telling you about the fleet. We all went dispersed, and we went with the aircraft carriers on visits to Australia, New Zealand, etc. Now, Vian was then a vice admiral, and he was in charge of the carriers, our carriers in the British Pacific Fleet. And he must have been a horse fancier, because he arranged it so that we got to Melbourne in 1946 for the Melbourne Cup. And we're in Melbourne for the Melbourne Cup. Yeah. Yeah, dear.
Which ship did you like serving in best?
Well, there's an old saying in the Navy, your last ship was always the best. Every ship I've been on has been the best. I've had no complaints whatsoever about any of them. I've had a wonderful time. And as I say, I think I did my duty. Yeah. Yeah.